There's a story that Jesus tells in the Bible, and it's a story that he tells to help people understand the nature of love. Some would argue he tells it to help people understand the nature of God's love. So there's this kid. He's probably a late teenager. And he goes to his dad and he says, "Hey, Dad, I want my inheritance. I want to go off and I want to do whatever I want to do. And Dad, it's going to be my money someday anyway, so don't tell me how to spend it. Just give it to me." And essentially, he tells his dad, "Hey, Dad, you're dead to me." Right? So I want my inheritance. That means you're gone. So his dad gives it to him. He gives him the money and the kid runs off. He goes far away. And he spends a lot of the money on pretty frivolous things. Things that are really self-gratifying, and he does the things that he wants to do until all the money's gone. And it runs out pretty quickly. I mean, his dad's a very wealthy man. He gives him half of what he has, and the money runs out pretty quickly. And the kid ends up going to work for this farmer, and he has to eat the slop that the pigs are eating. And this story in the Bible is often labeled as the prodigal son, right? That's the story that's put in there. But that's not what the writer Luke labeled it. That's what people later labeled it. Now, I would argue that's probably not the right title for this story because the story keeps going. There's more to it. The son finally decides, "I can go home and at least I can work for my dad. I'd be better off if I just worked for him and became one of his servants." But as he gets home and as he's walking down the road, he sees his dad standing there, just waiting for him. "It's my son." And he's so excited. He comes home and he throws this huge party. And he makes a really, really big deal about the fact that his son is home. When I was in seminary, I had a professor that said she thinks that story is mislabeled. That it should actually be called the prodigal father. Because while the word prodigal does mean to sort of squander and freely give money away, the greater definition that people hang on to is to love deeply. To love with all of who you have. So perhaps we've been misreading that story for those who have read it for a long time. And maybe we need to look at the lavish nature of the word prodigal. The lavish nature of the father who stands at the end of this long road and says, "Son, just come home. Doesn't matter what your story is. I want you home." We've been in a sermon series now for a few weeks called Reckless Love. And this is a series where we're talking about this commandment that Jesus gives to this person who comes up and says, "Hey, if I'm only going to remember one thing, what do I need to remember?" And of course, Jesus gives him two. Right? He says, "Love God with all of who you are and love your neighbor as yourself." And he says, "These are the most important things." So week one, we started off with, "Hey, let's just try starting to begin with love. Make that just the first basic piece. As you wake up in the morning, make a decision. I'm not going to begin with whatever I was angry about yesterday. I'm not going to begin with whatever somebody's ticked me off about. I'm not going to begin with what I'm annoyed about. I'm going to simply begin with love." And we talked last week about how if we begin with love, that helps us expand our circles a little bit beyond the people that we just like to actually caring about people in a greater circle. And this week, I want to take a little bit of a step backwards. I want to talk about where this love comes from, this ability for us to expand love, this ability for us to have reckless love, I believe comes from the very lavish love of God. And I want us to keep that image of that father who's standing at the end of the road after his kid has squandered half of his money. I want you to keep that in your mind as we talk about this today. Because lavish is a great word that describes God's love. It can actually be used, I don't know if you know this, as a verb or an adjective. You can lavish someone, or you can love in a lavish way. You can use it in both ways. And I want to use this definition today. Bestowing something in generous or extravagant, unmeasured quantities. See, often I think when we think of the word lavish, we think of stuff, right? Big houses. Right, they've got a lavish house. They've got a lavish car. They've got lavish, nice stuff. But I want to talk today about the ways that we can have a lavish lifestyle in the way that we love people and how that comes from the lavish love that Christ already has for us. I wonder if you can think of somebody in your life, and I want to pause for a second here. I wonder if you can think of someone in your life who demonstrates lavish love. Maybe not somebody right now. Perhaps it's somebody who loved you deeply when you were a child, Perhaps it's somebody in your neighborhood who just goes around from door to door to door and lavishly loves everybody. Perhaps it's somebody you work with. Perhaps it's somebody in your family. But I want you to think just for a second. I'm going to give you like 20 seconds. Is there someone you've known in your life who has demonstrated lavish love to you? All right, hopefully you have somebody. I want you to keep that image. When I was a kid, I had this babysitter. Her name was Mrs. Mills, and it's funny because my two sisters, who were on the ends of the four kids, are 14 years apart, and Mrs. Mills watched all of us at one point in time. Mrs. Mills was somebody that you walked in, and she loved with all of who she was. She gave you a big hug when you walked in the door. She made the best lunches. I mean, just great lunches. And we didn't want to leave her house. You know, it's great for a parent, right, when you come to pick up your kid and they don't want to leave. We didn't want to leave her house at the end of the day. Now, the funny thing was, I found out later in life that when Mrs. Mills was watching me, I think my mom paid her $20 a week. Now, that included lunch every day. It included her to watch me, but it also included something that happened every single Friday. See, Fridays was the best day at Mrs. Mills' house because on Friday, she brought out the goodie bag. And the goodie bag had your name on it. And honestly, guys, I cannot remember one content that was ever in the bag. I cannot tell you one thing that was ever in there. But what I knew was my bag was never the same as any other kid. She had especially made a bag for me with my name on it, a bag that was designed for me. And she would go into her room and she would come out with all the bags at one time. It was probably the time the kids were the most quiet, the whole time we were at her house. And she would hand out the bags, and you'd get your bag. I'm sure it was probably a couple of things from the dollar store. But she lavishly loved us with the bag. She lavishly loved us with her hugs. She lavishly loved us with all of who she was. I think that often there are people in our lives, and you may not have experienced this, often grandmothers play that role. Grandmothers lavishly love. I watch my own mom with my kids. I watch Susan's mom with our kids. They love in a way, even as parents, we don't. And I think part of that is because as parents, we have to keep them. Grandmothers just get to dip in and dip out. But they love in a way where they're not worried about the schedule. They're not worried about the stuff. They're not worried about all the things they have to do. They simply want to sit and be. I think when we love like Mrs. Mills loved me, we're loving lavishly. She loved without expecting anything in return. It's why I think 34 years later, I still so specifically remember her. Again, I don't remember what was in the bag, but I remember the woman who loved me. I think this is incredibly compelling because when we realize that we are deeply loved, we then go on to love others. When we are lavishly loved, when we can accept that and get to the place where we freely accept that, where the love has come freely and generously, we offer it in the same way that God does. Because lavish love, friends, is generous, it's abundant, it doesn't worry about the last person that dinged your car or what they left in your yard. It doesn't matter whether my kids put their dishes away at night for me to lavishly love them. Lavish love does not worry about the details. It's more about me than it is about the other person. It's how I give it to them. And that's what Mrs. Mills did for me. I want to look at a passage this morning that comes again from 1 John, which is where we've been in this series, chapter 3. And I'm going to look just at three verses this morning. It says, "See what great love the Father has lavished on us, that we should be called children of God." And I just want to pause there for a second. Simply that we are called children of God means that we have been lavishly loved. So keep that in your mind. And that is what we are. The reason the world does not know us is that it did not know Him. Dear friends, now we are children of God. And what we will be has not yet been made known. But we know that when Christ appears, we shall be like Him. For we shall see Him as He is. All who have this hope in Him purify themselves, just as He is pure. Now, I want to give you the context of this a little bit. John's writing to a group of people when a lot of schism and division is happening in the early church. There's a lot of places where people are not, they're fighting over who Jesus was and how they're supposed to relate to Jesus. And was he really just a wise guy? Was he the Son of God? Was he the one who came to die and then was resurrected? Were these things really real? And the church is divided on them. Honestly, much like the church is today. But there's this division, and he's just trying to keep the whole together with Christ being at the center of the conversation. That's his big goal in this whole thing. And how does he choose to do that? With love. He chooses the love of God as the basis for pulling them all together. See, these folks still follow Jesus, but they needed a little bit more. They needed a little more of something in the midst of this challenging time. So John writes this letter to encourage them, to strengthen them. John writes this letter to let them know an important, important thing. And I want to read verse 2 to you again. He says, "Dear friends, now we are children of God, and what we will be has not yet been made known." Sometimes we just need to be reminded of this truth. That God's love is lavish just simply in naming us children of God. And that should do something to us. That should transform us. Because, friends, belief, when we talk about faith, if you're a person who has faith, if you're a person that has faith in God, it is less about what you believe and more about how you live. I'm going to say that again. It is less about what you believe and more about how you live. You can believe that if you jump out of a plane and you're wearing a parachute, you will live. But if you never try it, it won't mean anything to you. It is more, friends, about how we live than simply what we believe. It's not just a matter of that. That's actually religion. Religion are the things you believe and the things you do sort of the actions of the inner church and the liturgy and the things you do. But living out your faith is what actually transforms you and transforms the world. It's what changes us. It's what changes the people that we have the opportunity to come into contact with. And if we have lavish love at the base of that, it is much more transformative. Let's look at the scripture again. It says, "See what great love the Father has lavished on us, that we should be called children of God. And that is what we are. The reason the world does not know us is that it did not know him." We've spoken about this in our other messages in our series, but loving people is hard. Do you agree with that? Anybody who says no, it's just real easy, they're lying. Or they love like two people, okay? Themselves, what is it, me, myself, and I, that's three, right? Loving people is hard. Loving people is a challenge, and I think that's why Jesus told us to do it. I don't think he told us to do it because it would be something easy. You just check it off the list and you're like, I'm good. I've got it done. He told us to do it because he knew that it would transform us as much as it transformed other people. Love is not something that simply does something for me. It does something for the entire community around me. And I believe that we are called to be more like the Father in that story that I told you in the beginning that we are to be like the Son. We are called more. That was the other thing my professor told us. She goes, why do we assume the Father in that story is God? Jesus never says that. When he tells the story, he never says, and the Father represented God. That lets us off the hook. That tells us that we don't have to go out there with that lavish love and share that. It makes it easy. We get to be the prodigal son instead of the one that says, I love you no matter what you did. And I stand here with my arms open wide to show that lavish love. I think some of the best of who we are comes out in how we love people. And some of the worst of who we are comes out when we don't. Some of the best things that we can show our children, our friends, our neighbors, is simply to be present with them and to love them. To provide the proverbial goodie bag, which is simply saying their name and having something in it that lets them know that we specifically care about them. Friends, we all have unique gifts. We all have things that we can share with other people. We all have things that we can do. So how are you going to live a life lavishly? How are you actually going to do something about it? I want to look at this just from quick two angles. One is, as a church, how are we as a church going to love lavishly? How are we going to love bigger? Because friends, there's plenty of churches around. I don't know if you noticed. You probably drove past six on the way here. Right? There's plenty of churches, but we have this little tagline that we claim we're not just another church. How are we going to do that? Friends, there are kids that are hungry. There are people that need mentors in our community. There's a community right over here that we have not gotten deeply involved in. There are people in your community who are hurting and who are thirsty and hungry and need a place to live. What are we going to do? There are people that you work with that simply need to know that they are loved. What are we going to do as a church? It is not my job, friends. I know this is going to surprise some of you as the pastor, to tell us as the church exactly what we're going to do. It is the job of the church to stand up and say, how are we going to love lavishly as God loves us out in the community? And then it goes to the individual level. So that's the church. What are we going to do? The individual. You all have gifts. Like, we've just done this strengths thing. We found out that everybody in our church, everybody in the world has strengths that God has given them. What are your strengths and how are you using them? Are you using them beyond your work and your household? Are you using them to love lavishly on your neighbors, on your community? You know, I didn't ask you if I could share this story, but I'm going to share it really quickly. I asked last week, and several of you wrote me, thank you. I asked last week for people to expand your circles and go out in your communities. And Rena told me they're new to their community where they live, and her daughter Talia made these door hangers, and she went and put them on every house in the community, inviting them over for a play date. Inviting them just to come and have tea, I think. Was that what it was? To have tea with her. I'd go have tea with Talia. How, as an individual, are you using the gifts that you have to lavishly love other people? A friend of mine told me this week, Jake, who's our pastor out in Loudoun, he told me that when he was in the Peace Corps in Armenia, he met these very special people. They were called tatiks. They were grandmothers, or at least they were older people. No one knew if they had grandchildren or not. But when you come as someone new to Armenia, a tatik adopts you. They don't ask you if you want to be adopted. They just tell you, you're mine. And he said his tatik would often invite him over for dinner. And he said in Armenia, they give you really small plates, and he couldn't figure out why. And he realized they pile the food up, and as soon as you eat it, they pile the food up again. So he learned you never finish your plate in Armenia. But he talked to me about the way that he felt so deeply loved by this woman, his tatik, his person who lavishly loved him. And I thought, isn't that the way that God is with us? God's love lavishly overflows the plate, never ending. We can never finish it all. It'll keep being filled. And the question is, do we leave there full and ready to go out and share that with other people, or do we simply sit at the plate and keep eating over and over and over again? God's lavish love is to nourish us to go out in the world to love other people, to lavish it on others. I want to invite you, on your seat, you have a heart this morning. Could you take out the heart? And if you notice, over the weeks, we're building our hearts on these trees up here. Our goal is by Easter to fill up these trees. But I want to invite you to write one of two things on this heart. And if you want to write something on the front and something on the back, you can do that too. But I want to invite you to write one of two things. One is, if you're willing to be open to experiencing the lavish love of God, I want you just to write your name on this. If you're willing to be open to experiencing the lavish love of God, just write your name. And then on the back, if you want to, I want to invite you to write someone, some community. It might even be those who live in your own household. It might be your extended family. It might be your neighbor, it might be your coworker, someone that you want to share that lavish love with. Someone that you want to love lavishly. Now, I'm not going to read these. I'm not going through and trying to figure out who's who. But I want to invite you to write your name on one side, if you're willing to actually be open to receiving the lavish love of God. And on the other side, I want you to write some name. Y'all, it might be somebody that's hard to love. It could be somebody that's challenging. Or it could be somebody that you go, well, I think I love them, but I'm not really doing anything to show it. But I want to invite you to do that this morning. And as we come to receive communion this morning, I want to invite you to bring those up. I think the first step is that we have to walk down the road to receive that love. We have to come down, just as the prodigal son comes down. We have to walk down to receive that love. And then I think we have the opportunity to switch places. We have the opportunity to turn around and give that love out to other people, to share that grace, own that we are called children of God. Own that. And then once we receive it, there's that goodie bag waiting for us. That thing that has the stuff in it that reminds us that we are loved. I loved getting that thing every single Friday. 34 years later, it still makes an impact on me. Every time I see these darn brown bags, I think about it. Every single time, I'm reminded of how much she loved me, how important I must have been to her, that she would lavishly love me. Receive God's love. Share that good news with other people. Let it transform you. Let it transform others. That's the good news that Christ wants to share with the world.